Hello and welcome to this episode of the Global Innovators and Business Series. In this series, we bring leaders and innovators from different fields to share their advice and experience with undergraduate students to provide inspiration and motivation during the pandemic. Today we have with us Mr. Steve Gu. Mr. Steve Gu is the CEO and co-founder of iFi Inc. iFi is working on automating the convenience store process, and we're looking into what the future of retail and automation will look like. So thank you so much, Steve, for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting, Chris.
Of course. In addition, this entire event is dedicated to the Deworm the World Initiative by Evidence Action. This is a charity sponsored and approved by the Effective Altruism Movement. And it is a very cool charity in that's shown through research to deworm a child in India for cents per child, and in Kenya for 66 cents per child, and vastly improving their quality of life. More than 866 million children are at risk of parasitic worm infections worldwide. And if you're looking into this, please check out our website and please check out our Facebook event page to learn more about how you can donate and support their initiative. So without further ado, Steve, tell us a little about yourself.
Sure. Yeah, my name is Steve Gu. I am the CEO and the co-founder of iFi. I have been working in this tech industry for a very long time. I got my PhD from Duke University, a major in computer vision. I published a lot of research papers in the field of computer vision and AI before the startup. After graduation, I first worked at Apple at the Human Interface Device Group. I was working on this called a so-called 3D touch. So if you're using the older generation of iPhones and iPads, you're probably using some of my inventions or co-invented with my colleagues back in 2012. That was a very fun time for me. And then I moved over to Google, working at a Google X, the so-called Moonshot Factory. I was in the Google Glass team. That time was a very sensational project, one of the world's first augmented reality glass, where you can use your eyes and hands to control the glass, and it's going to take photos. It had this see-through screen that you can see a lot of interesting stuff there. I actually won a couple of innovation awards there at the Google X. Unfortunately, I think the glass project didn't pan out really well in the end. They wound it down. And then in 2015, I then left Google. I was thinking about what to do next. I first published a book with a few co-authors. It was a book talking about the future technologies and some science fiction stuff. And then in 2016, we co-founded this company called iFi, AIFI. The idea is to make AI as widely accessible as Wi-Fi is, hence the name iFi. Yeah, happy to share more about iFi. If you have any questions, happy to answer about that.
Of course. And we'll get into that very soon. Actually, the first question is, you've been to Google, you've been to Apple. What led you to leave these large-scale companies to go to an entrepreneurial startup? And how was the transition?
Yeah, for me, it's this entrepreneur mindset is always very attractive to me. I love Steve Jobs, and I model them, adore them. I think that it's also, for me, it's also like naturally happening because the Google Glass project didn't really go well in the end. But a lot of team members, they left the project. Some moved on to other projects in Google. Some others, they left the company. They started their own companies. I think it's also a great opportunity for me because previously I was always thinking about how to apply my domain expertise into some specialty, some verticals to really make a dent. And it just came somehow this great opportunity where it so happened that we know some angel investors and we talk about some initial projects. They got excited about iFi as well. So we decided to just do it.
I see. Yeah, I think that transition is so difficult, and it's so many people are stuck in the same route, and it's very difficult to move out of it. Yeah. But tell us a little bit about iFi. iFi is trying to automate the process of convenience stores, and how are you going about doing this, and what is the technology behind it?
Yeah, at iFi, so we are automating the world's stores. So we developed a very advanced computer vision and sensing technologies to enable the system to be able to monitor who is grabbing what in real time inside a real shopping environment. I think even though it's doing its very inception stage, it's already grabbing a lot of attention from both media and from the shoppers and from customers. We actually launched almost 10 stores last year. You probably heard a few announcements from us. We have one store in Silicon Valley, one store in Netherlands, another one in Shanghai, in China. We have been developing the technology very rapidly these days to enable this unique experience. iFi is also very unique in the sense that you probably heard about Amazon Go, where people can walk in, grab stuff, and leave. However, that solution is quite expensive, and it's also still in its early stage. We, on the other hand, because our mission is to make AI as widely accessible as Wi-Fi is, so we try to make the solution very low cost, very easy to deploy, and very friendly to use. And today, our customers range from very large retailers, internationally recognized retailers in both Europe and the US, and also in Asia. We're also working with some of the mom and pop shops to empower the stores to run 24/7 nonstop.
I see. And just to talk a little bit more about that. So we're imagining the future of I go into a store and I pick up something from a shelf, and then the computer vision technology is able to track what I pick up. And when I leave, I can automatically, I need a card or something that's connected to the store to swipe out and check out.
Yeah. So, well, in fact, it's a checkout free, right? So you don't even need to check out. So basically you can use a cell phone app to scan a QR code in, or you can use a credit card or debit card to swipe, to tap in the entrance to walk in. And once you are inside, you can just shop as usual. You can grab stuff, you can inspect the items, you can return the items back to the shelves. Our system is able to track multiple people shopping simultaneously in the store. And once you are done shopping, you can just leave. There's no checkout, there's no waiting, there's no lines, everything is automatic. And if you're using a cell phone, you will be able to see the receipts popping up on the cell phone automatically. In contrast with Amazon Go, which the receipts might take minutes and sometimes hours to get, our system can provide you this real-time receipts so that you can really, in fact, the entire shopping journey can be just reduced to a few seconds, right? Imagine that you are catching up a train where you can just walk in, grab stuff, and leave. And I think it's one of the world's fastest shopping experiences.
That's very interesting. And okay, so if there's two products right next to each other, one is a 120 gram chip and then one is an 80 gram chip, how is the computer vision technology able to know that's which is which?
Yeah, we actually call the technology, a broader term, is called a sensor fusion. So it's composed of cameras, the ceilings, and in some corners. We also instrument the sensors into the shelves. And it's basically a combination of ambient sensing and the computer vision to enable the system to understand who is grabbing what and to be able to discern which product is which, right? So imagine that these two items are very placed adjacent to each other. They might have similar appearance, but they have different locations, or they have similar locations, but they have different weights, or they have different appearance. So we use the combination of that attributes to distinguish the items. Yeah, our system is also able to keep track of the shoppers. We actually have very advanced technologies that is able to track hundreds and thousands of people shopping simultaneously in an environment, I think, which is very cool to demonstrate.
Yeah, and in that process, you collect the data of the people who are coming in and going out. And what kind of information do you collect? And how is that benefiting the mom and pop stores and different retailers who are using this information?
We are not really collecting any information. So we use on-prem computing to grab the images of the environment and out of the person, and running deep learning models, neural nets on top to understanding what's happening there. And once the shopper is out of the store, the data is dissolved. We don't store anything. The reason for that is because we are actually working with several major retailers in Europe. There's this called the GDPR law that specifically prevents you from storing any sensitive data, biometrics-related data, without user consent. The beauty of our system and our thesis is that the system should be able to operate seamlessly without violating any user privacy laws, and in the meantime can provide this real-time shopper experience.
I see. So one big competition is Amazon Go. And I think recently, just earlier this year, they launched a product saying that they can license or utilize their technology for Amazon Go and give it to different stores that want to use it. What was your response to this news? And why do you think iFi is different from the product that Amazon Go is proposing?
Well, that's a great question. I think, first of all, the general trend, the macro environment is that the whole world is moving towards autonomous, right? Self-driving cars, smart home, and it's reasonable to expect that all the physical retail shops will become autonomous as well. And Amazon Go is one great example where I think that there's a lot of positive reviews about Amazon Go today. At iFi, we are actually pursuing a quite different task. It's almost in parallel with what Amazon Go is doing. Because to begin with, Amazon Go was essentially operating their own stores. And as a trillion-dollar company, they don't really care that much about the cost, about the retailer's actual demand and needs, right? So we, on the other hand, work with retailers to begin with. So we understand deeply about the retailers want. They need to worry about the inventory management. They want to know how to run the store most efficiently. And they don't want to disrupt their stores either. So from retrofitting perspective, for example, today if the ask is to how to retrofit existing store to make it automated, that question is actually very different from launching a new store, which you can do whatever to the store to make it automated. So we are working with constraints and bounds to begin with. And second is that we are not really competing with any retailers because we are a technology firm by heart. Our unique strengths are in the algorithms, are in the sensors, in the cameras, not in the store operations or retail category assortment and those issues. So we choose to work with retailers to make this happen, as opposed to Amazon Go, and they have this very large online e-commerce platform. In a sense, they are also competing with retailers. So I think that in the long run, I believe that most of the major retailers, they will be very reluctant to work with Amazon, and that gives us opportunities to work with them instead.
I see. So as a almost like a third party, you have a better view of the entire ecosystem, and you're able to better work and collaborate with other retailers.
Yeah.
I see. Interesting. And on the same notes, the technology, is it scalable or is it different?
Yeah, I think that, of course, we are still in the middle of launching many more stores in the years to come. But today, if you just look at today, our clients, we have a small nano stores, which only about 160 square foot, and all the way to a typical convenience store, about 2,000 square foot. And to supermarkets, which is about 8,000 to 10,000 square foot that range. So our technology is designed to be scalable. And to that end, so we basically design our system to be microservice based architecture so that we embed into the algorithms to make them fully distributed so that the technology can scale to a very large size store. There's no physical limit to the technology. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's a physical limit to the cost. Right. So what we are actually trying to optimize is to find the most cost-effective solution so that we can deploy these solutions both in small format stores and also in large formats too.
I see. So paint us a picture in the future, 30 years later, if we go into a retail store, if we go into any store, what do you envision is the customer experience?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. It actually goes back to the root of iFi. So Wi-Fi is permeating through the physical space. We hope that iFi would one day be as pervasive as Wi-Fi is. But you could also argue that Wi-Fi is today is almost a basic human right, right? So you can't live without a Wi-Fi. That connectivity is very important to everyone. Hopefully, one day, iFi can also be something that is essential to the society. It's also, if you look at this architecture that we're drawing, even today, it sounds very daunting because if you walk into the store, you will see a fleet of cameras on the ceiling. You will see a fleet of sensors almost everywhere. But like what Wi-Fi is, it becomes eventually invisible, right? So you don't really care where the router is. And we envision that in the future, this infrastructure for AI is also becoming invisible, right? So the whole set of cameras and sensors, those devices will become ambient and will become essentially dissolved into the environment. In a sense, the environment can learn how to think, how to sense, how to smell, how to sense the vibrations, how to understand the activities, how to recognize products. Essentially, those sensors and cameras will be dissolved and upgraded to be essentially just like dusts, right? Those tiny sensors can sense, do everything. So that's the idea we have. We believe that in 30 years from now, you go to retail shops, it just looks like a normal convenience store. It just looks like any shop you would have today, but it's fully digital in the sense that it understands what's happening in the store. And maybe the technology is not only limited to just the retail shop, it can also be applicable to shopping centers, movie theaters, university campus, your home, or the ambient environment.
I see.
I think this will be something that is very attractive to us.
So you said it would almost dissolve. Just to clarify, in what way will it dissolve? Is it because the technology will be nearly invisible or not be able to be detected? Or is it because there will be so much technology everywhere, there will be so many cameras everywhere that we will just get used to it?
It's probably more than that. So today, if you look at that phone, that's an intelligent device. But this AIOT, so there's a buzzword for that called AIOT. It's AI plus IoT. If you look at the future, the evolution of that, it means the daily objects and the gadgets like your pen and everything can think, because the edge computing device becomes so small and so tiny, and you can barely see that, right? And also that it's not just about the cameras. There are lots of unique sensors there in the world too that can tell the smell, the vibrations, the haptics, and all those things. So it's the combined sensing field that would enable these things to happen.
I see. And yes, so that technological change is not available now, but how long does it take for this process to change? And do you think like this requires in the future 5G technology to be rampant, or does it require anything specific to meet the conditions so that this is be able to spread?
I think that the autonomous store is one great example that can become a reality very soon. It's almost a reality today, right? It's already having 20, 30 stores there, and we have a dozen stores there too. It's just that the infrastructure is still pretty heavy. So you will see that the adoption curve initially is very slow because it's also very expensive. The underlying technology is also rapidly developing. So every week, every month, you see new publications from research at academia about more efficient neural net models, more efficient computing devices, better neural network architectures. And from the sensing field, you see more efficient devices and low-power devices, even wireless charging, all those things. I believe that all those things are converging to a sweet spot where those what we call ambient sensing will happen very soon. And you are talking about 30-year time span. Come on, that's a very long time, right? So I think there's one great guy, I forgot his name, he was saying the best way to predict the future is to create it, right? So I think that we are the ones creating the future, and hopefully in 30 years, that's the reality. Yeah.
That's very true. With that said, I think you came from an academic background, and how did you transition into business and entrepreneurship? What was the mindset shift in that process?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. But when I was doing my PhD, I could just narrowly focus on one particular difficult problem and finding the best solution to solve it. Even when I was in Apple or Google X, and usually you can focus on certain areas and without worrying about the rest. For example, I can propose crazy ideas without worrying about the cost, without worrying about the human capital, without worrying about some of the dynamics there. Now, once you are doing a startup company, you realize that this problem solving or technology per se is just a small part of the whole equation. There are a million variables that needs to be set right in order for the company to be successful. By the way, I said that we're not saying that our company is successful yet. We want to make our company successful. But in doing so, we realized that there are a lot of things that we need to take from the most of the actually relate to the human aspects, right? From people dynamics to management, to how to motivate and coordinate the team to make sure it's most productive, to identify the right direction and focus on that direction and not getting distracted on that. So I think it's very important. And those things, they usually don't teach you at school. And you probably have to experience that yourself in order to understand the subtleties and difficulties out of it.
Is there a story you can share about one of the biggest challenges you faced in starting this company and how you've tried to overcome that?
I think there were a lot of challenges. Every day we're facing a lot of challenges. Every week there are some decisions that might be detrimental to the company. So we have been very careful on that. One example I can share is, I think we started with a great dream, a very big dream, right? iFi, we say, okay, we want to make AI as widely accessible as Wi-Fi is. We have this vision that this infrastructure would eventually be dissolved into nothing and the intelligence will be very pervasive. However, down to earth, we still need to think about how to make money, right? So we also need to find a way to connect point A to point B. In so doing, we actually spent quite a while understanding which area we should focus on. Because eventually, even let's just say we have the best algorithm in the world that can squeeze the neural nets into a very small footprint to run on those low-power devices, it doesn't mean that you can make money out of it. So in the first year, we basically were evaluating very attentively with a few different companies, deciding which is the best route for us to monetize from. But we ended up choosing focusing on this autonomous shopping simply because the physical retail, the retail combined occupies almost 2/3 of the world economy. So it's one of the largest sectors you can imagine. And that's also happens to be the sector where AI can play a very important role there. So that's why we chose that. But that decision is not easy because in doing so, we're also giving up a lot of other options and opportunities. So I think that being able to evaluate and look at the opportunities, but also choosing and focusing on one and giving up the rest is actually a very difficult decision. I guess that's just one example that running startups can teach you about.
And what were the other options? So what is something else that you wish AI, you could have been a part of the AI revolution in?
At that time, a few years ago, there were potential acquisition opportunities. Some people want to just buy you for the technology you're developing. There were also, we were also negotiating about contracts regarding embedding those efficient neural nets into the edge devices. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's a very different application. It also means that we become a pure technology firm and not a product company. So by focusing on the autonomous retail shopping and building autonomous stores, so we decided to become a product company as opposed to just a mere technology company. So there are some qualitative differences there.
Yes. And more specifically, what other industries or areas do you think AI could make a huge difference? And you chose autonomous shopping, but what else are other industries, other areas that you could have gone into that would have been very fascinating and is still very fascinating in AI?
Oh, yes. There's a lot. Out of my mind, I can think about self-driving cars, needless to speaking. It's going to happen. Maybe flying cars, maybe something else. And then there are things related to IoT, smart homes, right? Your daily interactions with the objects. And in the sensing field, there's a lot that can happen. Surveillance is one large field. And then there are other sectors regarding, for example, marketing, legal, HR, all those fields can and should be disrupted by AI. And there are also other fields. You mentioned about, I think in the beginning of this talk, you mentioned about altruism. So you can use AI to detect those altruism, maybe to find some early signs, maybe even using AI to develop some practical solution to monitor and to as some preventive measure for the altruism. So that might be a great application. And the medical is a great field too, right? So now you can use AI to do the early diagnosis and also detect some cancer, some therapy. There's a million. I guess you name it, we can claim it.
And from your perspective, knowing both the Chinese side of the technology and the US side of technology, what is your just like general overview of like how the two countries have been in this tech race? And what is your outlook and what do you see in the future?
Yeah, I was born in Shanghai in China. I knew that the culture, the people there, and I moved to the U.S. for my study and eventually stayed here in the U.S. I think that there's a very interesting interplay between two different countries, a very different culture. I do see that there are a lot of talents in both countries. China is definitely catching up very quickly these days. If you look at the face recognition, surveillance, those applications, almost like commonplace in China now. As opposed to in US, I think there are lots of legal regulations about concerns and things. So in that regard, it seems it's lagging behind. But on the other hand, I think that if you talk about the true innovation and technology advancement, most of those innovation advancements happen in the US, especially in Silicon Valley. It's basically like a magnet sucking all of the talents from all over the world. I think that's uniquely attractive. Of course, now with Trump's new ban of H-1B and all those things, and who knows what's going to happen next. But I think that this AI is a young and a promising field that seems universal across countries, not only in US and China, also in Europe and also in other areas as well.
I see. Thank you so much for answering. How has COVID been impacting what you are doing and how your company is operating?
That's a great question. I think we definitely were impacted a lot by COVID-19. First and foremost, from company perspective, everyone's now working from home. So we shifted the culture from working collectively in the office in Silicon Valley now to basically everyone working at the home. So we're still getting adjusted to that. We're not losing productivity, but it's very hard because now you, especially from communication perspective. But also it's very challenging regarding the client engagement, because most of our clients are retailers, and some of them, they suffer a lot from this COVID-19. For example, one of our clients in UK, they originally were planning to open 50 stores with them in the airports and also in those transit hubs. But now all the airports are shutting down, and all the transit hubs are being locked down, and it basically delays the plan dramatically. Some of our clients, they might just went bankrupt simply because of this crisis. On the other hand, other retailers, they're thriving in this space. They see a surge of demand because of the need for the life essential goods, the grocery shopping, the PPE, and all those things. With those clients, we think that there's even a brighter future with this technology. You can imagine that the autonomous shopping, the field we're doing, it enables people to shop without interacting with anyone in the store, right? In this way, the people doing the restocking for the store doesn't have to be in the store in the same time with the customers. So that gives a lot of flexibility. And also nowadays, people are talking about social distancing and all those things. So it's also part of our offering in the platform as well, so that we can give retailers the alerts about if anyone is violating the social distancing, we can send alerts to the store operators too. So these are some of the impacts. We will see. We're closely monitoring the COVID-19 situation and it continues to adapt to that and to see how we can succeed in this crisis.
I see. What is your view on the future of retail?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you look at today's retail, I think the majority part of it has remain the same or stagnated for decades, right? So if you look at today's convenience store, today's supermarkets, today's mom and pop shops, it's not that much different from the shops 30 years ago or 50 years ago, maybe even 100 years ago. I think there's a great chance that we can revolutionize this field. People have been talking about omni-channel sale, blending the digital and the physical for a time, and this COVID-19 is also accelerating the adoption of this e-commerce platform. Amazon, JD.com, they are performing really well during COVID-19. I think moving forward, the retail needs and should be automated. It's not only for the e-commerce part, for the online part, but also for the offline, for the physical part. There's a lot of things we can automate, right? So the user experience, people shopping. Americans spend 37 billion hours just waiting in line in doing grocery shopping. That's just a ridiculous amount of wasted hours for human capital, right? Mm-hmm. But beyond that, there's also this availability issues, because today you have to drive miles to get to even a your closest shop, a convenience store, let's say 7-Eleven to shop. Imagine a future where instead of having people drive to those central places to shop, you push those automated stores as close as possible to where people live and provide those essential goods 24/7 to those people, right? So to local communities. That means that people should be able to access those goods whenever and wherever they want it. This notion of instant gratification will become real, right? So people are now patient. And you might also imagine that during midnight time, you want to grab a diaper or something, it would be very difficult for you to drive miles to get to that. What if there's a shop just near your apartment, only within 5 minutes walk? So that's where the shopping can be dramatically changed. And we believe these automated stores can enable that to happen. And on top of that, we can also talk about automated inventory, automated warehouse, automated analytics, and also extended hours, etc. So there's a lot of that we can innovate in this field.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And the next question is from Vijay Lopez. And it is a very technical question. Is how do you train the algorithms for the images which are picked up? And are they optimized for certain types of products?
That's a very technical question. and there's no simple answer to that either. I think that's why there's a whole engineering team working on those challenging problems. I do want to highlight a few things. And in the AI field, it's not just about algorithms, it's about data, right? So I think compared to algorithm data, perhaps even more important today than ever. The way we solve that problem is to create a very large scale, very sophisticated simulation system that can simulate all sorts of shopping behavior. You can actually look at our website. We provide some examples where we can simulate shoppers of different heights, different clothing, different hairstyle to grab items, putting items back. And we also digitize all of the product items in full 3D format and arrange them in such a unique way that allow the neural nets to learn who is grabbing what. It's a very fun and interesting problem to solve.
Do you mind sharing what is the accuracy of the product? I know Amazon Go is around 98%. Is there a number for what is the accuracy of a current product?
Yeah, our website, we are already showcasing some of the metrics there. It's called AAA, right? So our system is aimed to be autonomous, affordable, and accurate, AAA. So we aim to strive beyond the 99% accuracy. And that's our promise to the retailers. That's the promise to ourselves as well. So we want to make sure that the system runs with impeccable accuracy so that you can open the shop to the public without worrying that some people might be stealing stuff, etc. Just want to give you a reference that the natural shrink for a typical convenience store, shrink means that product lost, product missing, without knowing what's happening there anyway. The natural shrink for a typical convenience store is about 2 to 3%, right? Maybe 2% is norm. So if we can beat that number, aim for 99% accuracy, so we can even claim that this autonomous shopping is performing even better than a convenience store regarding the shrink reduction.
Perfect. I guess the last question we had was, what is your advice for undergraduates and graduates now? And what do you want students to take away from this interview?
Two things, right? So one is related to COVID and one is not related to COVID. So the thing that not related to COVID, I think experiences that we have to dream very big, make AI as widely pervasive as Wi-Fi. Dream big. However, we also need to drill down to the details and understand where to start from. And that focus is very important. We learned this lesson the hard way when we're doing our startups. And I think it's something that people should spend more time just looking into, for example, the go-to-market strategies, the product, the verticals, the exact pain point they're solving. So sometimes it's easy to start with a grand vision, but without the understanding and the real pain points, it'll be very hard to start a real business. And then the second part related to COVID, now that things increasingly become more distributed, right? So people work remotely. I think there are some unique opportunities out of it. For example, the social distancing I mentioned, we didn't realize that it could be part of the one feature of our product offering, but now we know that. I think that such opportunities definitely exist today. Some people are taking advantage of that. Some people are not seeing that. So I would encourage people to look into these unique characteristics of the post-COVID-19 world and see how we can innovate and create new and exciting things out of it.
Yes, dream big, but have a very strong focus and also take advantage of COVID and see new business opportunities. Thank you so much, Steve, for joining us. And finally, interview is again dedicated to Deworm, the world's initiative by Evidence Action. And check out their website, you can, and donate. Thank you so much for listening. And make sure to check out more content and subscribe to our podcast.